When I started birding, blue jays quickly became part of my everyday life. I grew increasingly fond of them, but as is often the case with me, it took an intimate acquaintance with one individual blue jay to permanently embed the species in my heart. In 1979, I was birding with my friend Ken Wood in a Madison park when we came upon a newly fledged blue jay quite literally playing on the playground slide. He'd hop up to the bottom and then flutter as hard as he could to work his way up the smooth, slippery slope. He never got even halfway up before gravity took over. He'd make a quick about face and flap his little wings as hard as he could, sliding down to the bottom. He'd stay aloft for a second or two before dropping to the dirt below. Then he'd start up the slide all over again. It was both charming and hilarious. We came close so Ken could take a few photos before we left. At home, I started feeling uneasy. Ken and I had both seen adult blue jays flying over carrying food. They clearly had a nest nearby. And this little fledgling was very conspicuous, but the adults never squawked at us or took any other defensive actions, even when Ken was photographing the little one at close range. So Russ and I went back to the park just in time to discover the tiny bird in the mouth of a golden retriever. Fortunately, this must have been a well-trained hunting dog because it held the little bird gently, and when I reached out to take it, the dog handed it right over. There were one or two drops of blood and a good supply of dog saliva on the little guy, but otherwise he seemed fine. Meanwhile, those two adult jays flew over a few times, completely ignoring the situation, and the baby bird still did not make a sound. I wondered if his parents hadn't abandoned him on purpose because he was so quiet. Most parent birds find and recognize their chicks, at least in part, by voice. One that didn't make a peep while playing in a playground, or especially when trapped in the mouth of a dog, may have seemed defective from an adult blue jay's perspective, but I'll never know. The moment the little bird's eyes met mine, an electric spark surged through me. As captivating as baby blue jays are to my eyes, it turns out they're even better at capturing my heart. Riding home, the adorable little bird snuggled into my hands and looked at me with bright, trusting eyes. I was scared to death of screwing up. So the first thing I did when I got home was call a dear friend of mine, Malcolm McDonald, who worked at the National Wildlife Health Laboratory in Madison. I knew he'd raised a baby magpie many years before, and he turned out to be a treasure trove of valuable information about diet and care. He told me that taking care of a protected species was illegal, but the laws were not very well enforced back then, unlike nowadays, and that he would use his many connections with the DNR and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service if anyone questioned me. The little blue jay never made a sound during the first 3 or 4 weeks I had him. I thought he must be deaf, so I named him Ludwig, and this is why I've always used male pronouns referring to him. I was a teacher and still had 2 or 3 weeks of school before summer vacation. The first week, I brought Ludwig with me every day, carrying him in a shoebox on the bus. Noel Johnson, my wonderful bus driver, peeked in the shoebox every morning to say hi to the little bird, and several other passengers took an interest in him, too. At first, I fed him every 15 minutes during daylight hours, whether I was home, on the bus, or in the middle of a lesson. My 4th, 5th, and 6th graders were as charmed as I, meaning 60 more people were invested in Ludwig's survival and well-being. When Ludwig got more rambunctious and started flying, I had to leave him at home. Fortunately, by then he could feed himself. On the last day of school, Ludwig proved beyond a doubt that, unlike Beethoven, he could hear perfectly well. I brought my desk stuff home, including my trusty orange bell from Russ's and my Parker Brothers pit game. During the school year, I rang the bell whenever I wanted the kids to settle down. When I set it on the dining room table, Ludwig looked curiously at it, so I pressed the button. It rang out loud and clear. Ludwig instantly cocked his head and pushed the button with his beak, but his breast was touching the metal dome, dampening the sound. When he stepped back, I rang the bell again. His crest popped up and he hopped up to press the button again, but again the sound was dull. I showed him how it worked a few more times, but then Russ and I went to another room to watch TV. Maybe 20 minutes or a half hour later, we heard a clear ding. A few seconds later, we heard another ding, and then a ding, 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 ding. I went running in to see Ludwig hitting the button over and over as he hovered, wings beating furiously above it, which was the only way the little guy could hit the push button without touching the dome. He seemed very pleased with himself. Now that he'd achieved his goal, he was ready to move on. I kept the bell on the table that summer, and he rang it once or twice more, but in the same way that my grandson Walter has outgrown his Fisher-Price Little People toys, Ludwig outgrew that bell. There are no evolutionary advantages whatsoever conferred on a bird for mastering bell ringing, but curiosity, keen observational skills, figuring out cause and effect, and tenaciousness are excellent qualities for any opportunistic omnivore, be it a blue jay or a human being. The longer and more closely I observed Ludwig, the more I grew to understand that blue jays exemplify the very best of what an intelligent, sociable species can be. That summer was filled with many more adventures with Ludwig, some of which I'll talk about next time. Russ took two photos of him. The slides are old and didn't scan very well, but you can see them on my blog at lauraerickson.com. I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.